My name is Jacob Miguel Vigil. I'm an associate professor in the psychology department at the University of New Mexico. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about some of our recent findings, which are significant for several reasons. They are ultimately the first real-time assessments of actual cannabis-based products used by millions of people every day in vivo. So we took the unique approach of actually recording the characteristics of the cannabis products that people were naturally self-administering. So we weren't intervening in any possible way, but we were using an app called the Relief app to record the characteristics of the cannabis products as well as their real-time effects across dozens of health conditions as well as myriad possible side effects. And what we found was quite surprising. First of all, this was a quite powerful test in that it was the largest data set of real-time effects of cannabis use in the United States. We essentially assessed about 20,000 cannabis user sessions. And with that in mind, we had the research question of measuring which cannabis product characteristics ultimately led to the most therapeutic potential, if they indeed did statistically. And what we found is that ultimately THC composition or potency levels were the most significant unique predictor of therapeutic relief in real time. On average, patients reported a point reduction of about negative 3.5 points on a 0 to 10 scale. And again, this is across the composite of multiple types of health conditions. And with that being said, another surprising finding was that CBD levels in and of themselves didn't appear to have as significant an independent predictive effect as perhaps the popular media would have led us to believe. And this study was unique in that not only was it a very powerful population-based study of these real-time effects, but it also enabled us to statistically incorporate the relative contributions of CBD and THC in the same equation. And unlike randomized controlled trials, which typically focus on either one cannabinoid or the other, we were able to essentially pit them against each other. And that's how we were able to derive these results of THC being a particularly prominent therapeutic agent, according to this data set, while CBD seems to perhaps be a little bit more elusive in its therapeutic potential. And there's many reasons why CBD perhaps didn't shine as a unique predictor of therapeutic pain relief. And one of those reasons is CBD may have a more latent time to effect than what we were able to measure. So participants were usually rating their self-administration and then their symptom severity intensity levels within about an hour period. So it could be the case that CBD actually produces different bodily changes that take longer than an hour or two to reach effect. It could also be the case that CBD taps into components of our bodily systems that are not readily available to cognizant awareness, whereas THC is notorious for tapping into attentional demands and perhaps facilitating mood adjustment and so forth. It might be the case that the types of symptoms that patients were reporting and recording were those that they had a visceral attentional ability to be aware of, and THC was able to tap into those cognizant components, whereas CBD perhaps, again, could be working behind the scenes in a way that is not devoting attentional awareness to a particular type of visceral sensation. The visibility and interpretation of how different cannabinoids ultimately affect both negative and positive effects, pharmaceutical effects, has a long history and is complicated. Historically, there have been many agencies that have essentially been built with the mission in mind to deter drug use, including cannabis use. So with that in mind, there has been a historical precedent for the federal government here in the United States to essentially fund studies that ultimately are designed to elucidate that those negative effects of cannabis on adolescents and throughout our society and so forth. So with that type of funding, of course, the studies were conducted, and human bias sometimes can bleed into our objectivity, but ultimately the result was a flood of studies that produced negative results on the effects of cannabis for human consumption. And scientifically, and as well as medically, the notorious agent behind the culprit behind these negative effects has been identified as THC. And that has long been the case for almost a century now. Now, in the past several decades, there is some light that's shining through the cracks in terms of the research that's been able to be produced here in the United States as well as elsewhere. And a lot of these studies, working with different types of patient populations, different methods and so forth, suggest that the type of cannabis that patients have been voluntarily taking on their own, sometimes legally and sometimes not legally, seems to be offering a lot of therapeutic potential. So the question is, you know, this cannabis that's on the street that has been hybridized for high THC seems to also be resulting in therapeutic potential, according to patient reports. So what's the deal? Well, the scientific community has sort of pivoted, and they have suggested, well, you know, what we have suggested for many decades, that THC is a very bad thing, perhaps causing psychosis and so forth, is still true. But we have discovered the therapeutic agent in cannabis, and they've identified that as CBD. And that kind of took on a lore of its own in the popular media over the past decade or so. And I've seen reports whereby the CBD market is projected to be even larger than the THC market, which is trillions of dollars. So there's a lot of folks that got really excited about some potentially safe therapeutic agent in the cannabis plant that could be legitimized for therapeutic use throughout society. And the basis there was that CBD is supposed to be non-psychoactive. Now, I have a very brilliant graduate student that would describe CBD as psychoactive, but not psychedelic, and there's a difference there. So presumably, if there's any activation in the brain, it's psychoactive. But the lore of CBD kind of grew out of the assumption that taking CBD offers therapeutic potential without tapping into psychosis or perhaps making one feel high. Again, that term high has been notorious throughout the years and condemned and stigmatized as something that's incredibly negative and something that's outside the scope of medicine, which but in theory, it's not really not. It's usually what we're trying to achieve as medical providers. But there's a long history of the role of THC and CBD and its visibility and presentation and interpretation throughout society. And what our results are suggesting is that THC seems to be perhaps one of the stars and has been the entire time. Now, it's very interesting that we're basically analyzing the largest data set in the United States using a very conservative statistical model. And when we pit all the available characteristics against each other, including route of administration, combustion methods, cannabinoid contents, and so forth, the one predictor variable that stands out and shines as ultimately very statistically significant is THC. And that just so happens to be the only agent that is still illegal. So under the current revisions and regulations and those laws, presumably all the other cannabinoids and chemicals in the cannabis plant have been lifted from prohibition except for THC. And one would have to wonder why that is. I think we're in a really exciting time right now. I call it the golden age of cannabis research, whereby if enough of us are thinking outside the box and if our voices are loud enough, that we will slowly start to be able to disseminate objective information out to the broader community and society and so forth. And we've essentially been embarking on this path feeling like pioneers in sort, and in part by engaging in observational types of research design. So I would like to emphasize that even though as scientists and providers, we've all been conditioned to assume that randomized controlled trials are the quote gold standard of research designs, they are essentially entirely flawed at addressing some fundamental aspects of healthcare, including what are the types of medical decisions that patients make and what are the outcomes of those decisions. Those two fundamental questions cannot be addressed through a randomized controlled trial. Now, legally, formally, the only way to conduct an experiment, a randomized controlled trial on cannabis, has been to go through a number of federal barriers, and it's quite difficult to do so. And oftentimes, the opposition to lifting cannabis prohibition laws have pointed to the instance where there's not a lot of randomized controlled trials on cannabis. So it's kind of a catch-22. It's a circular argument whereby essentially the work is really hard to conduct. It's almost impossible to conduct with all the regulations in place. And without those studies being conducted a certain way, oftentimes legislators are not convinced of changing perhaps some of the regulations. So I just would like to emphasize that there's many different ways to conduct research. There's many ways out there right now to be a participant in some of these studies. And it's fundamentally important that we take back and take back control over our healthcare. That's one thing that I think the cannabis offers that's really unique. Not only does it have such a wide therapeutic potential, potentially affecting in real time symptom relief across so many different types of health conditions, but it's also different in that it's variable. It's not a standardized, uniform pharmaceutical agent. And what that means is that the patient can never obtain the same thing twice. Now, what that implies is that perhaps directives by our providers, as we've been accustomed to with regard to conventional pharmaceutical applications, is not the most ideal paradigm to work within with regard to cannabis therapy. And essentially, it seems like the simplest approach is for patients to accept the role of being an active agent in the decisions that they make and being willing to engage in trial and error, perhaps in different dosage levels, different forms of cannabis and so forth, but be actively engaged in that operation. And that's an entirely different paradigm of healthcare altogether, in that patients are taking this active role, making decisions. And through the use of some of these applications, like this relief app that we were using, patients are able to record the effects of that experimentation and essentially are provided feedback so that they can reflect and make concerted decisions moving forward. So I have personally observed the therapeutic potential of cannabis in patients of all ages, from just a month old to in their 90s, and across so many different health conditions. I have seen so many people that are glad to share their tears of joy over how cannabis has offered therapeutic potential unlike any other conventional medication that they've been taking their entire life. And that in and of itself is enough motivation to keep us working on these topics.